Our subject this morning, the best. We're continuing our look in John chapter 2, starting at verse 1. But before we do, I want to talk just a few moments about mums. And I think we all agree that mums are the best. Now, all of us here, however old we are, we've got mums or we've had mums, and in fact, we planned that we have our older young people with us today, but a lot of them are on half-term holidays, so we haven't got so many, but that's okay. So my question is to anyone who's ever had a mum, okay? And that is this, really. What things do mums ask us to do that make us reply, or at least want to reply, things like, do I have to, or can't you ask someone else, or even it's really embarrassing, or it's not fair, it's not my turn, I can't, I don't know how to, why are you asking me, it's not my thing, it's not the right time, it's too early, or it's too late. What are the sort of things that mums ask us to do, and we get that kind of response? Come on, I want an answer, one or two answers. Go to bed is one of them. Wash the dishes. Do as you're told. Tidy the bedroom. Stand up in, that's one of the ones. Yeah. Yes? Unload the dishwasher. You guys have such a wonderful mum. Never embarrass you at all. Kissing relatives. That used to be. I found this lovely quote. We started watching The Waltons on TV. And there's this lovely quote where the two of the youngest children are discussing, and they say, one says to the other, what does it mean, kin? And they say, the other one says, kin is people you're related to. And then the brother and the sister say, so are we kin? And the sister says, no, we're just, or the brother says, no, we're just brother and sister. Kin is people with moustaches that you have to kiss. So, there you go. The reason why I'm asking this thing about mums is because we get in this story a mum who asks a son to do something, and the son says, not really the right time. When I was over at my mum's a couple of weeks ago, when Gabby was in Romania, I said, right, okay, I'll go and stay with my mum for a day, forget about church and everything like that. I'm over there. She says, would you come to my church and talk to the ladies and gentlemen at coffee break lunch? You know, it's like a busman's, isn't it, holiday. And exactly, you say, oh mum, you know. And then she wants me to go to the dump and dump loads of stuff as well and look at her paperwork and so on and so on. But that's the way it is with mums. Let's have a look in John chapter 2, starting in verse 1. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee, and Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Now nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 80 to 120 liters. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. And then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, even though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Now, in this passage this morning, I think that there are seven steps to seeing God change a situation. Seven steps to seeing God's best in this situation. So I'd like to ask you a question. Can you have a look, please, in the text? What was the first thing that someone did that made the miracle possible? And the answer is in verse 2, and I want to know the person or the people and the action. No. Thank you very much. Look, the hosts, I assume it was the host, somebody, the host invited Jesus. Hasn't that got to be the first step for all of us if we want to see Jesus changing situations? We've got to invite him. A lot of our focus this morning from the songs has been open my eyes, open my heart. I welcome you, Jesus. I invite you. Inviting Jesus into a situation has to be the very first step. So, what was the second thing that someone did that made the miracle possible? This is in verse 3. Who was it? What did they do? Jesus' mother said, "They have no more wine." Mary brought the need to Jesus. Hasn't that got to be a really important step to see God change situations? Jesus could have worked out that there was no more wine because there wasn't any on the tables or in the jugs or in the glasses, etc. He could have seen, but someone brought the need to Jesus. His mother, Mary, "There is no more wine." What is the third thing that someone did that made the miracle possible? Yes. Yes. Mary said, "Do whatever he tells you." Yeah? And I've put that in a summary as saying that Mary declared faith. Declared to the people that Jesus is able. Surely that's important. When we're going to pray about situations, we've got to declare that our God is able. We've got to declare our God is able. Otherwise, what is the point of bringing the need to him? So, what is the fourth thing that someone did that made the miracle possible? I'm going to look at my notes, check I get it right. Fourth thing. Jesus told them what to do. Can you read that little bit? What did he say? Thank you. So here I just put that Jesus spoke. You know, we've got to be asking Jesus to speak. And so often, of course, he speaks through his word to us, or he speaks into our conscience. You know, we've got to be asking Jesus to speak. What's the fifth thing? Let's have a look. Number five. The fifth thing that someone did. They obeyed him. Thank you, Lawrence. Do you want to just read that little bit? Thank you. So the servants obeyed. They did what they'd been called to do by Jesus. They filled the jars to the brim. Sixth thing. What was the sixth thing that someone did? Verse 8a. That is the first part of 8. No, not there yet. Jesus spoke again. Thank you. Jesus spoke again. What did he say the second time? He told them, not to the guests, to the master of the banquet. Okay. How do you get this? If we're going to see Jesus changing situations, it may well be that we're going to be asking Jesus to intervene. He's going to speak and we're going to have to obey. He's going to speak again. We're going to have to obey again. Let's not assume that God's going to change situations if we just obey once and then go back to doing things our own way. And I wonder if this perhaps wasn't the most challenging, most difficult of all the steps. I mean, it's okay saying Jesus saying, you know, fill these jars. They're used for washing. So they were like jars, it said for ceremonial washing. Yeah. So there were jars that were used to pour water so people could wash their hands, their feet, and so on. And the servants are told, go and fill them up with water. Well, we'll do that because we often fill them with water. Nothing. You know what I mean? Now, Jesus is saying, take some of the whatever it is. Is it water or is it wine? Take it to the master of the banquet, who might well be your boss. You know? Risky, isn't it? What was the seventh thing? Oh, that was the sixth thing. The seventh thing. What was the seventh thing that happened, that someone did? They did what they were told. So we got exactly the same answer. The servants obeyed Jesus again. And that is so key. And I almost feel, if you look at that whole miracle, if number seven hadn't have been carried out, I wonder whether points 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 would have happened too. I wonder whether the story would have made it into the Bible. I wonder whether we'd be discussing it today if the servants hadn't obeyed twice what Jesus told them to do. So our subject this morning, the best. Here in chapter 2, we find the first record of Jesus' awareness of time in the Gospel of John. Do you recall when we had that very first week on this Gospel of John and the slideshow that we've made available on the website? One of the things we pointed out is that in this Gospel, a huge amount of emphasis on Jesus' awareness of time. The right time, the wrong time. The time when everyone else does things, but the time when Jesus is called to do, to be. And of course, one of the things we see is that Jesus does things according to his Father's timing. Verse 3 tells us, when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my time has not yet come. You might be surprised, Jesus referring to his mother as woman. If your 13, 14-year-old son called your mother woman, maybe you would say that's a bit disrespectful. Don't forget, of course, Jesus is about 30 years of age now. Jesus is God. If you just tweak the wording and say, if he said lady, you know, lady. The point is that Jesus is God. Yes, he's the daughter of Mary, but he's God. Son of Mary, of course. He's the son of Mary, not the daughter, the son. You're awake this morning. The son of Mary. But he's God. And he's got his Father in heaven. And there comes a time in every young person's life and every 30-year-old person's life when you have to say, am I actually going to do what my mum and dad say forever? Or am I going to do what my God is calling me to do? So what about us? Is it time? Is it time to give ourselves to Jesus? Maybe we've been kind of sitting on the fence for a long, long time. Is it time to give ourselves to Jesus? Maybe we've sort of kind of been in and around, but we've never publicly declared that we love Jesus. Maybe it's time to publicly declare that we love Jesus. Maybe it's time to receive Jesus as our Lord and Savior. Maybe we've read the Bible many times and we keep coming against that wording about, you know, people being believing in Jesus and being baptized. Is it time for you to follow Jesus, to believe and be baptized? Is it time to take Jesus at his word? Maybe for someone else it's time to set aside time to spend reading his word and in prayer. Maybe you feel like you're kind of not involved in stuff in the church. Maybe it's time to commit yourself to serving our God in our church. Or maybe for you, Sunday is pretty much all there is to church at the moment. And maybe it's time for you to commit yourself to a small group where you can be nurtured, where you can grow, where you can be encouraged, where you can encourage others. You know, recently we've started working with our older young people, the teenagers, 1, 2, 3 extra. We meet in homes on Sunday evenings with them. We're going on this walk. It's really important to give our young people time and space to ask questions, because they face some pretty big questions coming up. Some of the questions that we all face, but particularly when we're young: what will I give my life to? What will you give your life to? Who will I give my life to? Is there anything better than the best? Is there anyone better than the best? If you look with me in verse 9 in our passage today, please. The master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, even though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." And I want to ask a question. This man, the master of the banquet, was he only talking about the wine in the jars, which was the best that had been saved till last? Or was he unknowingly also talking about Jesus? Unknowingly. You see, in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews is this amazing book. It's in the New Testament, but it talks about all the people from the Old Testament. So the Old Testament is everything that happens up until the time of Christ. The New Testament starts with the time of Christ. But this great book in the New Testament, Hebrews, talks about all the people and the things that went on in the Old Testament. And it's just a wonderful book if you're trying to get your head around how does everything all fit together. And in this book of Hebrews in the New Testament, chapter 11, a whole load of Old Testament characters and events are listed. And I've just pulled out the names for you. Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, Rahab, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and because the writer's running out of space and time, and the prophets, putting them all together. And then the writer in Hebrews says, these people were all commended for their faith, yet not one of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. God had prepared through that whole Old Testament era something better. And there'd been a whole list of people. God had prepared something better and someone better. He had saved the best till last. The master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, even though the servants who had drawn the water knew. And then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now. When you look at history, God saved the best. His best. Our Jesus. Till last. In the Old Testament, there's lots of narrative and lots of great people. But you see, none of them could solve the heart of the problem. None of them could get to the heart of the problem. And what is the heart of the problem? We find it in the account of Noah and the flood. The heart of the problem is the human heart. And none of the Old Testament characters, wonderful as they were, faithful as they were to their God, none of them could solve the heart of the matter, which is the human heart. But when our Jesus came, of course, everything changes. Only he could die in your place, my place, our place. And our passage that we read in verse 11 ends with these words, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. This transforming water into wine, it was a miracle. But if you notice, the writer doesn't use the word miracle. What is the word he uses? In verse 11. Sign. Yes, sign. This was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. And you'll notice throughout this Gospel of John, whenever there are miracles, they are not referred to as miracles, but as signs. So you have to ask the question, what are the signs pointing to? Because a sign, if it's not pointing anywhere, is no sign at all. The sign which revealed his glory. And what is the purpose of the sign? Well, the purpose, so that his disciples would believe in him. And in the next chapter of the Gospel, chapter 3, that we'll be looking at in a couple of weeks' time, you'll meet Nicodemus. And Nicodemus arrives and has a chat with Jesus. And his opening comments are the fact that Jesus must be God because he's doing all these signs. Doesn't say miracles, he says signs. We'll see that in a few weeks' time. So what should our response be to all of this? His disciples believed in him. God saved the best till last. And Jesus' disciples put their trust in him. So if you are looking for something to believe in, if you are looking for someone to believe in, let me recommend that you believe in our Jesus. Maybe you have tried the rest. Now it is time to believe in the best.